Welcome to Blast to the Past, a talk show where we revisit the media that shaped our culture.
That's right. We just watch old movies and see if you still like them or if they hold up. So
that's basically it.
Why put
lipstick on a pig?
Why do it?
Yeah, man. And today we're going to take a look at Jurassic Park. One of my, I'm gonna come right out and say it. It's one of my favorite movies ever made. So we'll have to see how we approach this one. It's hard for me to be as objective with this one.
I mean, it's one of your favorites. How do you come into this with a clear mind? Like, you know, you're going to put this on top.
I know. Yeah, you're exactly right. This is like the first VHS that my family bought that was not a Disney, like one of those big clamshell Disney boxes, you know, like it came in like a slim paper case. It looked PG themed when you looked at the cover of it, you know, it's black. It had the skeleton.
What year was this? From 94, 95?
Was 94. That when the movie? I was 94. 7 years old, and I guess it probably came to VHS the same year, but I remember getting it for my birthday, like that, which, you know, I'm born late in the year. But anyway, I remember getting for my birthday, and it was like, oh man, like this, I can't wait to watch this. I've seen the previews. I'm ready.
Do you have any idea what that cost? Like, did anybody ever mention it to you back then? Because if I'm not mistaken, when they first came out, they were like $125.
Okay, yes, you're right. But VHS came out in the early 80s, I'm pretty sure. So
the prices went down? Because I remember when you were like,
It was okay. Like, you know, I think my era, probably your era of purchasing media with our own dollars, probably the DVD Blu-ray era, they were about the same price, you know, $20 to $30, maybe $30 for a brand new. But like, I never paid $30 for a DVD. I would always wait until it was a sale for $20. You know,
I just remember hearing, like, this is before I was buying VHS. I was, you know, teenager or whatever. And I would hear VHS for like $100, $125. And I was like, that's bananas. Yeah. And then I know the price came down over time. And by the time, you're right, by the time I was buying media, it was, I'm not sure I ever even bought a VHS. I don't know if I ever purchased a VHS. I was born in 82.
Yeah, so like VHS were like the things, you know, my parents bought.
I rented them. I would buy blank Maxwell VHS tapes, and you know, my sister and I would put it in there and record a movie or a TV show or whatever.
So many of those laying around the house, and I was horrible and notorious about not labeling what I did. So like, I'd put like just, I was so lazy as a child, and everything that I did, I would put like a slash mark, like a backward slash, and just assume that I would know what that meant later on, like as opposed to labeling it with an actual word.
Yeah, you know, a month from now, you might remember. 14 years later, I don't know.
Right, exactly. So, of course, like everybody else, those all went to the garbage bin anyway. But we are talking about Jurassic Park. It was made in 1994. If we look at the summary from IMDb, it says that an industrialist invites some experts to visit this theme park of clone dinosaurs. After a power failure, the creatures run loose, putting everyone's lives, including his grandchildren's, in danger. That's kind of like, I guess that's like the most basic and boring way you could describe this film. It stars Sam Neill, Laura Dern, and Jeff Goldblum. All, I think, actors and actresses who at the time would not have been considered famous in any way. Is there, of those people, is there anyone that kind of steals the show for you?
Not of those three. Now, I do understand that 20, 30 years later, looking back, that Jeff Goldblum has a few memes that kind of stand out. The Jeff Goldblum shirt wide open, more open than mine. Like, just sitting there.
You give him a run for his money.
I try. I wake up every day trying to find my inner Jeff Goldblum. And that obviously was like a thing now, still today. I can tell you something Laura Dern's been in, and if I saw Sam Neill on the street, I wouldn't know who he was. But Jeff Goldblum is the big one for me. Also, Wayne Knight, because I'm a big Seinfeld lover.
You know, that's Nedry, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know what his name was. He's Newman to me. And all my notes, he's just Newman. Like,
shout out to every single kid who grew up Baptist and knew immediately the first time you watched Jurassic Park that the kid who is in the fossil scene, who like Dr. Grant kind of like puts the claw up to his throat and is like way inappropriate with, and in like a violent way, talking about rappers with. Do you know what I'm talking about? Anyway, that kid is from McGee and Me, which is like this Southern Baptist show, Christian show, that every Christian kid watched back in the day.
And he was in Jurassic Park?
And he was in Jurassic Park. And when they're on the dig, there's just some random kid that walks up and starts asking all these stupid questions to Dr. Grant towards the very beginning.
And so this is before he meets the nephew. This isn't a nephew.
Not the nephew. Yeah,
this is grandkid or whatever.
In the archaeological dig in, what is that, Nevada or Arizona or New Mexico, wherever they're at.
Okay.
Well, this movie is directed by Steven Spielberg. If you don't know Steven Spielberg, you've been living under a rock, but he directed Jaws and Schindler's List and E.T., the original Indiana Jones trilogy, Saving Private Ryan, among countless other classics. Tab, I'm going to kick it to you, put you in the hot seat. Do you have any other favorite Spielberg movies off the top of your head that I did not just mention?
Can you repeat the ones you mentioned?
I mentioned Indiana Jones, it's not just the original, the trilogy. I'm pretty sure he directed all of them. Saving Private Ryan, E.T., Jaws, and Schindler's List.
Okay, my favorite, not on the list. That's my favorite Spielberg
Haley
movie.
Haley Joel Osment fan?
The GOAT. What a year he had. Dude, did he do AI and...
The Sixth Sense in one
the
year?
The Sixth Sense, yeah.
I don't know. Year? It was definitely around the same time. I'm not sure if that came out back-to-back. Okay, AI, that's a great choice. I am a huge fan. I love Hook. I think that movie's good, and I don't know why people dislike it so much. I'm a huge Robin Williams guy. Like, just growing up, Robin Williams was like my favorite comedian, my favorite movie actor. And, you know, even though a lot of his movies are very sentimental, for some reason, they all still hit with me.
I think Hook would be a great choice for us to do one day, because I don't think I've seen it. I just don't remember it.
Really? Yeah, we should definitely do Hook. I'm definitely down for that. I mean, Spielberg's movies, I think, have aged pretty well in a nutshell. I'm sure there's some outliers, but I've rewatched a lot of them throughout my life, and they all seem to hit pretty.
Yeah, AI stands out. Saving Private Ryan. Those are 1A, 1B. They're up there. AI more.
One of my favorites is Minority Report. That doesn't seem to get a lot of attention. I think that's a great sci-fi movie.
Here's the problem with Steven Spielberg. He's done so many great films, and there are many of them that I didn't even know he did. I did not know he did Minority Report, and I love Minority Report. And
Minority
here's a fun
Report
fact.
Is awesome.
I didn't know he directed Jurassic Park until the closing credits.
Are you serious? Wow.
I saw Steven Spielberg's name pop up, and I was like, son of a bitch. I was half hour into this movie, and I go, whoever directed this would have been wise to just retire. Just like go out with like, I did Jurassic Park. It's a huge blockbuster. Everyone's talking about it. It's the movie of the year. I'm done. And I just assumed that's what the director did, because I was like, I don't know who this guy was. And then, you know, the final credits are rolling. It says big, bold letters, Steven Spielberg. I was like, what the?
Incredible.
I'm a knowledgeable movie guy. How did I not know this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, it was him and James Cameron that were bidding for this movie. And Cameron's coming off of, at this point, Terminator 2. And Steven Spielberg worked with a lot of the special effects team from Terminator 2. But when Cameron lost out on the bid, I guess it wasn't like a bidding war for money. It was more that James Cameron was an hour late. So before Michael Crichton even published Jurassic Park, Universal Studios bought the rights to it, and they wanted Steven Spielberg to do it. And I guess Cameron's agent and him never got to it in time. But that brings us to the fact that this is based on a novel by Michael Crichton. The screenplay is penned by David Kupp, and he wrote the screenplay and the story for Mission Impossible 1. Like, to my knowledge, that is his story, his characters and everything. But he also wrote the screenplay for the first Sam Raimi Spider-Man movie.
So that's Tobey Maguire?
Tobey Maguire, the first one, just part one. Okay. So some pretty monumental blockbuster films for this guy under his belt.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's kick it into genre exploration, where we'll talk about this movie and how it's aged as kind of like a sci-fi adventure thriller, but also weirdly, it's kind of in this like monster movie category as well. So, Tab, what do you think makes this a good science fiction movie?
I thought the special effects were really good, and I thought they held up. Okay,
I agree.
Sure, you could look at a dinosaur and by today's standards, you know, hell, it's better than Sci-Fi, you know, network. I'm telling you right now, you know, it's way better than Sharknado and stuff like that. I'm not trying to say it's on that level. I'm just saying, like, it's good. It's I thought it was really good. I was impressed with the special effects, but I'm sure there's like when you take like Godzilla 1 or minus 1.
Oh yeah.
Okay, the special effects are better in that. Okay, it just okay, but for what this is, which is a well lit, not dark, because you can hide a lot of bad special effects, but it's like making it a dark, you know. And they would have a Brontosaurus out in the open field with the sun shining, eating bright green grass. And I'm looking at it like that's like 87% real, and you can like you could tell it's not real, but you know. It might catch somebody under certain circumstances, you know. I'll bet you no one thinks a Brontosaurus is real right now, right? I mean, I'm saying, but like it looks real enough.
Yeah,
but so I thought the special effects held up real well, and I think a lot of animatronics were probably used. That's my guess. Was it? Do you know if that was like? Cause I feel like a lot of animatronics had to be used for the dinosaurs.
We'll get to this in more detail of for why I think this is going to hold up historically. This is on the cusp of CGI and like the old way they did special effects, like in Star Wars and all of that stuff. So this movie was originally going to do all animatronics and claymation for all of the special effects. And they not only did they like invest in those, but they had like everything ready to go. And then this one guy, I can't remember his name exactly, but he's like, I can do all this in CGI and it's going to look better. And he shows this to Steven Spielberg after the claymation stuff has already been like shown to Spielberg, and Spielberg was like a little disappointed in it. Like, this isn't exactly what I had in mind. And the CGI was just on point. So they basically used a mixture of animatronics and CGI for this movie. So robotics essentially and CGI, there is no more claymation in it. They got rid of all of that, but the claymation guy got really into kind of like putting people, for the CGI, like putting actors in like certain suits and like making dinosaur movements so like they could make the CGI more realistic. So he kind of repurposed his role. I think the special effects hold up really well. And I think it's a mixture of practical and CGI that is really the best way to do things. And I think if they did that in the modern day and invested in modern day practical effects mixed with CGI like this, that would be like the perfect cinematic blockbuster experience.
Yeah, also kudos to the claymation guy for adapting like that. Sometimes you got to zig when others zag.
Yeah.
So as far as the sci-fi, you know, I wouldn't even have considered this a sci-fi until you just said that. Now, maybe that's just, to me, sci-fi equals aliens or something like that.
Right.
Like, I don't consider a ghost story sci-fi. I don't consider dinosaur sci-fi, but I get it. Once you said I was like,
it is science.
Oh, yeah.
It is science. Yeah, there's a lot of science in this movie, actually. Especially expositional moments, you know, the way they just are really talking about like the DNA of dinosaurs and how this would even be possible.
So I think my personal problem with it is when I hear sci-fi, to me, I think sci-fi,
right?
And I should think science fiction, because when you say it, science fiction, oh well, duh, the idea that dinosaurs were walking around in 1994, science fiction. But when I hear sci-fi, I just think laser beams and, you know,
Star Wars, aliens, Star Wars, that kind stuff of stuff. Like that.
Yeah,
I get that.
Girls with three tits.
Yeah, the what is that? Total Recall.
Let's do Total Recall, dude. Total 100%. Recall 1 was dope. I loved it. I'm gonna go in biased as fuck on that one, dude. I love some Total Recall.
I'm 100% down with that.
I'm down for that.
I loved that movie in middle school. Yeah. I haven't seen it since. So let's make that put that in a notebook.
Total Recall.
All right. So we're thinking about this movie as a thriller. I think probably adventure, thriller. That's more of its like real genre. I personally cannot think of a movie with this many iconic, intense scenes. Like the entire hour of this film is just set piece after set piece of thrilling and entertaining scenes. But how did you feel about this particular movie holding up as a thriller?
I'm just glancing at my notes. And before we go any further, we need to mention that Samuel L. Jackson is in this movie.
Oh, dude, yes.
And
so he's also incredible.
When you mentioned Laura Dern, a guy who, excuse me while I scroll up and find his name, Sam Neill, Jeff Goldblum, Newman, we have yet to talk about the goat,
the best,
Samuel
the
L. Jackson, which is in this movie, and does a fantastic job.
Oh, he's
it's
great.
Not like you know, Goodfellas, where he's, you know, you see him for 4 minutes and he's shot in the head. Like, he's got a lengthy role in this movie until he loses everything but an arm. You know, at least they have an arm to bury.
He's got some great one-liners as well.
Yeah, and he's, no one smokes a cigarette that literally should have been ashed 11 minutes ago better than Sam
it's
Jackson.
It's not even just that he smokes it. The way he talks with that cigarette and it just bounces up in his mouth the whole time is like, it's really remarkable.
I'm curious to see what you think are the iconic scenes, because I made note of a few, but I'm sure there's more. What was the question again? Is this a thriller? What about this as a thriller?
Yeah, yeah. Like, how did you think it held up as a thriller? Like,
as a thriller? Okay, so I might upset you a little bit on this right here.
You won't. I'm very confident in my stance, okay, with or without whatever you think. And I think it's great that we disagree. It's better.
Okay. I agree. It's everyone likes to hear a little back and forth. No one wants to hear two people agree, right? Anyway, we've talked about this, me and you, about this movie for about the past week. You know, whether we're playing poker or just, you know, texting or whatever. So I knew you were coming in with high expectations. And one thing I was a little hesitant. I'm a little curious how you're going to react to this. I thought the first 56 minutes of this movie were the absolute most boring 56 minutes of any movie I've ever seen in my life.
It's 56 a lot
minutes
of just
setting it up. But once it hits, okay, once Newman decides to put his master plan into place, that's when things get interesting. The first 56 minutes, and I paused it and I was like, this is boring.
Yeah.
I was like, why was this such a big hit? Even when they were, they finally got the doctors and they got Jeff Goldblum, who I don't even know what he was. Is he a doctor? Is he a scientist? I don't even know. So they get these people and they're bringing children in and they're like on these Jeeps, which are kind of iconic, the Jeeps. And the Jeeps are going down the little, you know, roller coaster on the flatland. And they kept striking out. It's like, hey, here's the, you know.
Well, there's nothing there. Yeah.
Dinosaur, a cage. Nothing. And they're like, oh, here's the T-Rex. Nothing. And it's just like striking out left and right. I'm like, all right. Like, and even the guy, the scientist guy's like, God, it's boring. And everyone's like, God, it's so boring. And I'm like, all right. This, like, I'm sitting here watching going, why was this a popular movie? And then Newman, I don't even know what his excuse was. And let's talk about Newman's plan. Do not let me forget to tell you about Newman's master plan. Okay. So Wayne Knight, a.k.a. Newman, from here on out referred to only as Newman, he has this plan of getting dinosaur DNA and taking it on and selling to somebody for $750,000.
Pretty good price.
And when he starts that plan, that's this domino effect where things just go completely off the rails, and it becomes an interesting movie. And there are certainly times where I would say this is a fantastic thriller. You were on the edge of your seat. You got dinosaurs, you know, within spitting distance of children. People hanging off of everything. Like, if you can hang off of it, they're hanging off of it. Like, it's like, right, it's just bananas for like the first 56 minutes is a big old nothing burger. And then from then until the credits of Steven Spielberg, it's just nonstop thrills.
Yeah, and that's it. That's it. It's a tale of two halves, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's a blowout loss in the first half. And they come back, and I think it's like the best, you know, it's the best comeback story of all
fantastic
time.
It's fantastic.
Because they just hit, you know, they hit 100% in the second half. No, I completely agree with you. I have grown to think that the expositional side is well done. I do think it's boring in the first half. There's no question about that because it sets so much up. But what that allows this movie to do is move at a breakneck speed for the last hour. And I don't know that I've ever seen a movie do that in this way. It's like literally almost its own genre because there is so much exposition in the beginning. You kind of lose faith in the fact that this is going to be a blockbuster film. And then suddenly it's like, shit, hang on tight, because we're not letting go for the rest of the ride. And it kind of feels like an amusement park ride to me for the last hour of the film. Like, as soon as the T-Rex breaks out of the fence, and you have that, like, 7-minute scene with the tension between the children, and then Jeff Goldblum and Sam Neill getting out of the car and, like, trying to get them away, and then you get to see the lawyer get eaten, which is great fun. and then it moves back every it seems like there's a break back to the security room for like 3 minutes of respite, but really there's just dramatic tension boiling up there because they can't fix anything, right? And they know that, you know, whether it's the grandchildren or Dr. Ellie's boyfriend, like they know that their loved ones are on the outside facing danger. So there's really no release of tension in any way for that last hour.
Yeah. Agreed.
There is to an extent. It's like two different types of tension going on. And then you've just got like some incredibly iconic scenes with the raptors in the kitchen, like kind of chasing the children and everything. So good stuff all around.
What would you say are the iconic scenes? Obviously, okay. To me, the number one is the water cup that vibrates, the tremors.
Yes.
That's number one.
That whole T-Rex scene, I feel like, you know, just from the roar, that crazy roar the T-Rex does, that whole T-Rex scene is like imprinted in my mind. I think like the T-Rex even eating the guy out of the bathroom shed, like that was the first like death on camera I think I ever saw. So maybe it hits harder for me. So it's like, it was really, really intense.
That's your first?
I think so.
Wow.
Maybe, I mean, like I said, this is like the first PG-13 movie that I ever saw.
Oh man. I remember being like 10 years old. My sister and I watching this movie called Barbarians. It was like two twin brothers that were just fucking roided out, just slaughtering everybody. I was like 11. I was like, we watched that shit every day. Like a whole summer. We had like, it was every day, like 9 a.m. in the morning, throwing in Barbarian twins. These two guys are just slaughtering people like it was nothing. Like, when I saw a guy get eaten on the toilet, it didn't even register.
Like, yeah. Well, you know, and that's what happens, right? We're all desensitized by a certain age. But for me, I was what, 7 years old? So, you know, pretty young at this point.
That's a good point. No one's dying in the Flintstones, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I also think like the scene where Timmy's in the car and Dr. Grant goes up to get him and then the car like kind of falls down the tree slowly. That to me registers. There's the stampede scene with the T-Rex later on.
Yeah.
You've got Samuel L. Jackson's arm being flung at Dr. Ellie or whatever her name is in the movie, Ellie. As she's kind of like turning the power back on. There's just so many moments. And then of course you got the raptors in the kitchen as well. So
also, how about the Wayne Knight getting spit on in the car?
Oh yeah, there's another one. Yeah, that's absolutely. A big one. Yeah. And that's right after the T-Rex scene. And then the big moment there is like, as you know, as you're a more mature viewer, you realize like, oh, that is it for everybody. Like there's no escape plan after that. Like he was the head of security. He had all of the codes with him. So when he dies, everybody's just in scramble mode.
Oh, that's what Wayne Knight was, the head of security?
Yeah.
Was he the son of the doctor that started the thing?
I don't know about that, but he is, and he is definitely the head of security. So he has like, he has access to literally everything in the system, and he's the only one that has access to it. Or at least he's coded it that way.
Okay, so I've got a really good synopsis of the entire movie. You tell me when you want me to. Oh, ready? Okay, great. Okay, so let's start with the beginning. When Crocodile Dundee, this fake Crocodile Dundee guy, is releasing a raptor into the exhibit. Long story short, a man gets murdered. Okay. And then they file an OSHA claim. Can you imagine calling OSHA on that Monday morning? Like, hey, we've had a death. Oh my God, was it a forklift? Did he fall off a ramp? No, he was eaten by a dinosaur.
Yeah, that's like, not going to fly over well.
He's eaten by a dinosaur? And he's like, the family. And I was like, this is what got me. Like, first off, the opening scene was very tense. Like, I did like that. That was like where the fun ended for like until minute 56. So the first few minutes, this poor guy who's just like, I just clocked in and now I'm getting eaten. Afterwards, I'm thinking in my head, I'm like, that's a problem. You can't have people dying at work. And then the next scene, you get lawyer guy showing up talking about a $20 million lawsuit from the family. And I'm like, good for the family. They didn't just believe the bullshit. Like, I'm sure somebody called me and was like, hey, I'm sorry about Daryl. He slipped, fell, hit his head. I don't know. Like,
yeah,
they're like, I want to see a corpse. And they're like, funny story. We don't really have it. We'll have it in a few days, you know.
It's going to come out as a pile of feces.
It's going to eventually, you know. And then Wayne Knight makes an appearance. And
Dotson, we've got Dotson here.
Yeah, Dotson.
No, his name's Nedry. And then the other guy's Dotson. Yeah.
Yeah, Dotson. He's like, Dotson, get Dotson here. And Dotson's like, hey, low key.
Yeah.
And so Wayne Knight, the whole point of the whole what's the term? The whole like arc of the movie is Wayne Knight is trying to sell secrets, and in doing so, he triggers all these safety features to come down, and now you've got, you know, untethered dinosaurs running amok, right? So Wayne Knight, Newman, just doing total Newman, like Newman goes total Kramer on this whole movie, which is what sends it into this great, like, fun area. Because up until then, it was pretty. One of my favorite Newman quotes, he's sitting at the computer talking to who might be his dad, I don't know. And he says, you know anybody that can work 8 connection machines and debug 2 million lines of code? 8 connection machines?
What the heck is a connection machine?
What is a connection machine? I wrote Lane Park, first 2 exhibits, no dinosaurs showed up, this movie's boring. Oh, the lawyer. Let's talk about the lawyer. So the lawyer shows up when they leave, like, the buildings, and they're going out into the world. And the lawyer, I don't know if you caught his outfit. Lawyer is wearing a button-up long sleeve, short khaki shorts, which I'm a fan. Yeah. I'm not hating on the short That's shorts. Fine. I love the short shorts.
But the pairing is an interesting
it's
choice.
It's a big pairing with a tie, long sleeve shirt, which I think he rolled the sleeves up, short shorts, and huaraches. Did you notice the shoes? They were wearing huaraches.
I don't know, like, what huaraches are. You'll have to, explain.
I have 2 pair of huaraches right now. They're probably Latin American themed shoe. They're very tight, first off.
But loafers, right?
It's very similar to a loafer. You know, very similar to a loafer. And then you got the lady with the absolute massive pile of dinosaur shit.
Oh, yeah. She's
next to the
T-Rex
that's struggling. Let's talk about that pile. That pile. I'm not gonna pretend like I know how much T-Rex is shit. So the Tyrannosaurus was like the pile of shit he was next to, and he's like on his side dying, or she, I think she called her a she, sitting there dying next to an enormous pile of shit. So my question is this: was that one shit, or were they just going back and just piling on?
I think it's got to be one pile of shit, hopefully. I mean, but yes, always a comically large pile of dung.
And then Wayne Knight puts in his master plan, which let's talk about this plan, okay? Because when he was talking to Dotson, he was so confident. He's like, bro, I got 18 minutes. He's like, that's all I need. I'll go from my lab, I'll get the embryos, disable security, drive a vehicle all the way to the docks. Make the exchange, get all the way back to the lab. I'm assuming in 18 minutes. This plan goes off the rails immediately.
Yeah, the monsoon storm. I guess you didn't account for that.
The driving of Wayne Knight.
Oh my gosh, what is wrong with this man?
The worst driving in any movie.
Now it is
ever seen.
Understandable. Maybe he's completely intoxicated, or maybe he's high on something, because if you're under that big of a stress situation, maybe you would have to cope in some way. But there's no excuse for his behavior.
He makes every wrong decision. Okay, let's talk about the fact that he is going way too fast for these conditions. It is hissing rain and there's mud everywhere. Okay, he is on top of that steering wheel like Joe Biden on a third grader. Okay, he is like all over that thing. Like, and this is how Wayne Knight's driving in torrential downpours. He's like on that steering wheel.
It's a great visual representation.
I'm watching this. I'm like, that's the thriller. That's the tension of the movie. Wayne Knight driving a Jeep, crashing it like 6 times. Finally gets out to winch it out of whatever predicament he's in, meets some kind of dinosaur. We just annihilated Tyrannosaurus and Triceratops. I'm not even going to pretend I know what the hell spits that venom.
Yeah, that's fair. We need to be put on the sideline for a minute.
And he spits that venom on him, which is obviously a big iconic scene in the movie. And he drops Barbasol can. Let's talk about Barbasol. Was Barbasol paying for that advertisement? You think they were giving
100%. Like 100%? Yeah, that's product placement. No question.
Fantastic.
Very cool prop, by the way. That like screw off the shaving cream can. I want to smuggle something in a Barbasol can now. Like
that's how everybody in college hid their weed.
Really?
Was in like cans like that. Okay. I had a Diet Coke can. It just had Diet Coke. Looked like a can. But and you open it up and it was just completely empty inside. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Thank you.
We use like books that we cut out the center of the pages for.
And then Machinal Dundee. later on when the shit hits the fan, Machiavelli Dundee is like, I'm going to go save the day. Grabs one gun. You go to the T-Rex pen, one gun.
What? Yeah. That guy strikes me as a badass. Like, I feel like, yes, one gun was a bad choice, but I also had full confidence in him.
I did.
Maybe it was the way he was dressed. Like, he's easily been on immeasurable amounts of safaris. Yeah.
He was confident. I loved his confidence. Loved his confidence. The kids were annoying. I was rooting for them to die. I'm not sure if that's a good thing.
Probably not. That may be a character flaw.
The boy come right out of the cannon and being obnoxious as hell, which was his character. I get it. He was obnoxious, right? And the girl.
I thought the girl was fine.
A vegetarian hacker girl?
Oh, yeah. That's a little annoying. A little cliche. First of all, hold up. I'm going to vouch for Tim. I think he's great. I have no qualms with Tim.
Who's
I
Tim?
Like kids.
Oh, the kid.
The kid, the boy. I thought he was great. I think he's not annoying at all. I think like he's supposed to be annoying maybe from the script, but I just thought like he pulled it off great. Like a kind of like inquisitive kid who's really tenacious. You'd have to see what I deal with on a daily basis to know that that's not annoying behavior in my opinion, but
fantastic acting from a child. Obnoxious yes. character, not his
I think
fault.
Spielberg.
I'm not judging.
Is his best when he's directing children. Like the stuff
point.
That he gets out of kids is crazy.
That's a really good point. Do you think Haley Joel Osment just came out of the womb acting like this? He was like,
no way.
No way. I mean, he's fantastic in AI. That's a great point. Also, E.T., I'm sure he got the, you know, fun fact. I went to junior high with a kid whose cousin was one of the boys in the little gang that took E.T. off into the.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He was one of the guys. I don't know. He wasn't like the main kid, but he was like one of them.
Oh, that's cool. We're going to talk a little bit about the historical context here. Jurassic Park came out in 1994. And when it came out, it was the biggest movie literally of all time. It grossed over $914 million worldwide at the box office, which made it the highest grossing film of all time until it was dethroned just 3 years later by Titanic in 1997. But then the next year, it was the fifth best-selling VHS of all time with 17 million units sold. That wasn't necessarily its one-year total. That was kind of like its overall total. But it aired in March of 1995 on NBC for the first time, just under a year after its first release in theaters.
Wow.
And 68 million people tuned in. That was
fourth in the country.
Literally a crazy amount of people. So this film was just a huge cultural moment. I think, like, I remember as a child it just being a part of a lot of conversations. It captured children's imagination. It captured adults' imagination. But I think a lot of that was its large historical mark in special effects. It came at a time, we already talked about a little bit, the dawn of CGI, but there were also some animatronics in there as well. And I've been thinking about this a little bit once I watched this movie, but like, when was the last time you saw a film tab that you were just like, wow, that completely blew me away. I didn't think that was possible to see in a movie. Because for me, I have an answer, but it's been a long time. And I'm wondering if there's something for you that sticks out.
Are you talking about CGI related?
It doesn't have to be CGI. It could be just a moment where you had that, like, it could be as an adult too, where you just had that sense of like childlike wonder where you're just like, I didn't realize they could put this on the screen and it looked like this.
Okay, so from a CGI perspective, I'm going to give you two, which come to mind. This is the first time I've heard this question, so two immediately come to mind. That's Ex Machina, one of my favorite movies of all time, which is fairly new.
Oh, heck yeah.
And
that's an incredible movie, man. I love that movie. Shout out to Alex Garland. He's one of my favorite screenwriters. He's an incredible director. Gosh, I love that movie.
Love
so
that
much.
Movie for so many reasons. I love one of a sucker for a small cast, and the fact that four people pretty much carry this movie the entire time.
I love tight, contained films.
Yeah,
and if you can put a film with that much tension and thrill inside one house, I mean, my gosh, incredible.
Nailed it. Another one comes to mind is very recent, more recent than Ex Machina. I think it was called The Creator.
Okay. I've never seen that. I've heard of it.
Maybe I could be wrong. Look it up real quick on IMDb. The Creator. I think it had the guy from the Ku Klux, the KKK Klansman, that guy in it.
Okay, got you.
And I just thought the CGI Black Klansman. It was a black KKK Klansman.
Yeah,
I don't like saying KKK over and over.
You just said it like five times, dude. We've already been flagged. We will not be available on any popular streaming service.
Not being monetized. That guy, I think it was called The Creator, saw it in theaters within two or three years. Yeah. I was very impressed with the CGI in that movie. So, but when I'm grading movies on a curve, two movies stand out, which is Star Wars, any of them, pick the first three, or technically 4, 5, and 6, or 2001 A Space Odyssey. I think they did a fantastic job given the year that happened.
Oh, I mean, 2001 is one of the ones I go back to where I'm just like, how did Kubrick make this with what he had at his disposal? I mean, I really genuinely believe Star Wars wouldn't be possible without what Kubrick did first.
But as far as, you know, what childlike wonder, nothing comes to mind, to be honest with you.
Okay, that's fair. For me, the last one that this hit for me, and, you know, I was still a kid, but The Lord of the Rings was the one I think that stuck out in my mind when I started thinking about like special effects that really wowed me in a way that I didn't think they were possible anymore, which is not necessarily an indictment on special effects. It's just that things are so good now that they don't really like have the weight that they did. I think in the 90s or the early 2000s when you saw something and it was just like, whoa. And like starting with, maybe for me, like as a movie viewer, the Terminator, like late 80s or early, mid 80s, and then just like Terminator 2 to Jurassic Park to Titanic to The Lord of the Rings, there's just like leveling up every couple of years, you know, to where you're just like, wow, we're in this space where special effects are believable. They can create fantasy worlds or whatever, and it's perfectly believable. And I think that like, that's not as much of a draw to films anymore, but I do think it was a large part of the reason that this movie captured the imagination of so many people back then. And I could be completely wrong. Maybe that's a very personal way of, or microscopic way of looking at it. But that's one thing that was popping into my head when I was thinking about why this movie would have been the biggest movie of all time when it came out.
I would say the animatronics pushed it up. That was a great choice to not use CGI on up close, because that's where you really notice the differences when it's up close. Like when the brontosaurus is eating a plant from 300 yards away and it's still big, but you kind of blends in with the background a little bit. But when you do up close CGI, that's where things fall apart. That's where you notice the little nuances. And to go animatronic, fantastic choice. Totally believable. I remember being a kid and I was like, I don't even know, third, fourth grade. And one day we woke up ready for school. Mom was like, you're not going to school today. You're going to play hooky. I was like, we're going to what? Like, what do you mean we're not going to school? Like, that's a thing? And we just pretended to be sick. She called the school, said, I'm sick. My sister's sick. And we went to the mall in Montgomery, Alabama. And we went to a Jurassic Park type exhibit, like an old abandoned, like in the mall, like an old store out of business. Oh, they just put like a bunch of animatronic, like Jurassic Park type dinosaur heads that were like pop out. And I was just like, whenever I watched this movie, that's what it brought me back to. Was like going to that dinosaur exhibit on a hooky day, my first ever in third grade, like sanctioned by my mom. Like, okay, thanks, mom. Like, we woke up getting ready for school, you know, and she's like, stop. Like, you're not going. We're going to this. And then, man, that experience then matched with Jurassic Park. And I could tell the animatronic parts of it kind of hit home for me. Like, it really, like, touched me. Like, I enjoyed that part of it. And I really appreciate that they went animatronic and not CGI.
Well, you know, and that's another thing that I hadn't thought about necessarily as much is, especially if you're a boy, probably, you know, two dudes speaking here, but I think dinosaurs are a part of like almost every boy's childhood. So there's probably a certain part of the imagination that captured for a lot of the American public as well. World public is also, but, you know, again, I'm speaking from my own limited world perspective, but, Okay, so it's time to get to the film review. What worked, what didn't? How do you think this film is going to age in 30 years from now? Tab, you seem to think that the movie started off on a slow note and then ended on a bang. But what do you think? We've already talked a lot about what worked, just kind of organically. What would you give this movie out of 5 stars? And was there a person who stole the show from you? For you,
Wayne Knight Newman will always hold a special place in my heart. But when you look at this movie as a whole, I think Samuel L. Jackson. He was just so cool in this movie.
He is awesome.
The cigarette hanging out of his mouth the entire film. About 50% of it was ash at all times. Like, I thought that was great. I thought he did a fantastic job. I thought all of his lines were delivered with like realism. To me, that stood out. That was the performance that really stands out. R.I.P. Sam Jackson, lost, you know, only an arm remained. Rating wise, I'm kind of between a 3.5 and 4 stars because of that 52-minute. The first 4 minutes are, you know, tense, and then it's just minute like 53 to 56 when Newman decides to enact his plan. That was hard to overcome.
Okay, I get that. I'm going to give this movie 5 stars because of the special effects, but also because I really think that even though the exposition is a little dull, I think on repeat viewings, there's humor in there. There's good dialogue. None of it at any point feels like it's stiff or anything like that. It's a little bland, but what the exposition does is something that I don't think any other movie I've ever seen allows for, and that is a full entire hour of paying off on every single like story thread they set up in the first hour. And so, yes, it's boring as hell for the first hour. I watched the first hour probably once. I can't remember ever watching it though. I literally fast forward to like, I remember exactly where I stopped the tape. It was 1 hour and 2 minutes. It was like after the first footfall of the T-Rex. That's where I played Jurassic Park from, and I know all those scenes afterwards, you know, because that's when I was a kid. Like, that's what entertained me. I didn't want to watch any other stuff. So I totally understand that the first hour of the movie is boring. I just think that once you have seen that, it allows for the movie to pay off in multiple ways constantly, which is really interesting. I really can't think of another movie that is set up like that. The person that steals the show from me, though, is Laura Dern. I think that she is an incredible actress. I'm a huge fan. I think she does a great job in this movie. She has a great scream, first of all, which is really great. But she plays like not like super sexualized, but just kind of like cool, smart woman in a time where it wasn't really necessarily a thing. And I just remember always like having a crush on her, and I think she's a super super cool actress. So that to me, like, she's always going to steal the show for me in this movie. Although Samuel L. Jackson, definitely a close second. I do not like Jeff Goldblum in this movie. I think he annoys me. And I think that he is like kind of an annoying character in almost everything he's ever been in. I don't know why, but like all the Jeff Goldblum love has never like really gotten to me. I do like The Fly, if you've ever seen that, like the Cronenberg film in the 80s. That one's pretty fun. And I love The Lost World as well, even though it's a bad movie. And he's kind of the star of that one. So it's fun to see him take on the starring role. He's much more tolerable, though, in The Lost World. I don't find him tolerable in this movie. He just annoys me constantly. Yeah.
Him and Tim.
He's my favorite character in the book, Jeff Goldblum's character. I don't think he does him service in the movie at all. By the way, the book's completely different. Completely different.
Tim is like... How did he hurt his leg?
Who?
Jeff Goldblum.
So when Dr. Grant gets out of the car and waves the flare to get the dinosaur to come to him, Jeff Goldblum does the exact same thing after Dr. Grant's already like achieved the mission and got the T-Rex out of the way. And Goldblum's trying to be the hero, and it is a very nice gesture. But the T-Rex then starts to chase after him and just picks him up in his mouth and throws him. And he lands far enough away, I guess, from the bathroom, but like in that same general vicinity. That's where the people find him after They found remains of the lawyer.
Speaking of T-Rex putting someone in their mouth, let's talk about the death of the lawyer on the toilet.
Yes, okay. Please.
First off, when he went in the bathroom, like, that's where he hid. I remember thinking, good move. You're safe.
It was a great move.
You're fine. Nothing's going to happen to you. It's a T-Rex. He doesn't know what a bathroom is.
Right.
And then all the walls and the roof fall down. And there's just a lawyer sitting on the toilet. The T-Rex looks at him, grabs the lawyer with his huge T-Rex mouth and shakes him, right? You remember right. that?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Do you notice what happened?
I'll never forget it.
You notice what happened?
No, not at that moment.
The huarachas stayed on. Not a single huaracha flew off.
What incredible product placement. See, I didn't even know.
If that doesn't sell you on a pair of huarachas, I don't know what will. The fact that a T-Rex would grab you off the toilet and shake you around left and right like a dog bone, and the things do not fly off. They are tight. Okay? I'll tell you right now, go on Amazon, you get a pair for about $42. Fantastic. I would recommend, okay?
Okay,
right. One of my two everyday shoes, pair of Huaraches. All right,
I got a question, because yeah. I'm a big shoe guy, okay. But not like you would think. Usually it's not fashion forward. I hate shoes with, like, extra padding and comfort, like, around the sole. I feel like those are things fucking up everyone's feet. So is there a lot of, like, support, or is it just like, I want to be walking on my bare feet all day, basically? Is it like a thin loafer, or is it like one of those things that's got, like, you know, like Hoka amounts of padding to where I'm going to have to be walking on clouds all day?
On a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being barefoot, 10 being, you know, running shoe, it's a 3. If you okay. want to go next thing from barefoot, get a pair of water shoes. You can get them on $8 on Amazon. I got like 4 pair. When I used to live in Florida, that was my everyday shoe. I'd walk into businesses and they'd be like, are you wearing socks? I'm like, no, it's a shoe. Like, that's a 1. Huaraches are like a 3. It's very okay. minimal.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
I can run grab a pair right now if you want to see.
Right, now, I think I actually know. I feel like I know what you wear just because I can tell by the shirt you're wearing. Like, it's going to make yeah. perfect sense.
I'll send you a link. I'll send you a link. Right. $42 on Amazon. They're fantastic. You'll love them.
Yeah. Perfect.
But,
love it.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a good movie for sure. I would recommend. I think it holds up. I got no complaints with this one. The CGI was good. The use of animatronics was a very smart choice. Acting was phenomenal. And it's a great point you made about Steven Spielberg getting the most out of kids. Because I really think him, the actor, as obnoxious as that character was intended, he's 7 or whatever. He got a fantastic job out of that kid. That kid acted his ass off. And I don't know if he went on to do anything else, but God bless him. He did a phenomenal job.
Yeah, both the kids did. I don't know how prolific their careers were. I looked them up on IMDb, though, right after I watched it, just out of curiosity, and I think they're still acting today in certain small things. But all right,
the girl clearly has a career in hacking, I'm just saying.
No question, yeah. Number one hacker. As long as the program interface is in 3D rectangles, she's going to do fine.
Gonna nail it.
All right, dude. That is all the time we have here. But you can write into us at blasttothepastpodcast@gmail.com and tell us what you think about Jurassic Park and what you think we should look at on a future episode. We will see you next time.
Thanks.
See ya.